As I mentioned, we are going to pick up in Genesis 25 in just a minute, but there was something I saw this week and I thought was really cool, and I did not know this. If you do know it, then you don't spoil the surprise for everybody else. But if you go to Genesis chapter 5, I'm really hot. Can somebody turn on the fans? If you're cold, I'm sorry. But I'm honestly going to start sweating in a minute, and I'm not even feeling guilty of anything. So, come on, now that was funny. Thank you. So, if you look at Genesis chapter 5, what do you see there at the beginning? So, you've got a list of names, right? Generations. And so you'll see Adam and Seth and so on. I'd never really looked at this before. You know that the Bible, often when God puts a name on somebody, it's important. It says something. So I want you to notice something I had never seen. So as we go through that list, and hopefully this doesn't fall over, but the first name is what? Adam, right? And then what's second? Seth, right? Who's third? Enoch, right? Enosh, I'm not Enoch. Enosh. Okay. Who's next? Kenan, right? Okay. Mahalio, right? I have to look at this one to make sure I spell it right. Let me see. It's, yeah, I'm good. There's an extra A-L in there. Mahalio. Then it's Jared, right? What's next? Enoch. This is Enoch here. Next one I'm definitely going to have to look at. Methuselah, right? Make sure I'm... Okay, I got you, Methuselah. Okay. And then Lamech. And then Noah. Okay. So here are the patriarchs leading up to the flood. You've got how many generations there? So you got what? Five and five. 10 generations. Now, I want you to notice what each of the names mean. So if I come out here to the side of Adam, what does Adam mean? Anybody know? Man, right? Anybody tell me what Seth means? It's appointed. Appointed. I know you can't read my handwriting. I'm more nervous about the spelling because I know I'll get spell checked. But Enosh, you might know? Mortal, right? Mortal. Okay. Kahina? Anybody guess? Sorrow.
This is what they what
Hebrew. In Hebrew. Right, these are all Hebrew names, right? Anybody know Mahalalel? That's all right. The blessed God. You can get that from the EH on the end, by the way. That's God. All right, Jared. This one means shall come down. If you start to guess it, don't guess it yet. Well, anybody... Now, with Enoch, it's actually not super interesting on the surface, but it means teaching. What about Methuselah? old guy, right? His name means his death shall bring. His death shall bring. That's a long one. Sorry, I'm trying to write fast. All right, then we got two more. Anybody know what Lamech means? The despairing. The despairing. Make sure I'm spelling that right. Yeah. All right, we get to the punchline. Anybody know what Noah means? Does not mean grace, although he found grace in the eyes of the Lord. His name means rest or comfort. We often talk about how you can see Jesus on every page. Watch this. Man appointed mortal sorrow, the blessed God shall come down teaching. His death shall bring the despairing rest and comfort or comfort. To me, that's powerful. Out of a list of names that we often just overlook, that even in that, there's the hidden message of Christ. That to me is an amazing thing. So I saw that and it just overwhelmed me. I've been thinking about that a lot. But maybe that's something to hold on to this week. Finding God's messages sometimes are right in front of us that we don't see. Man appointed mortal sorrow, the blessed God shall come down teaching. His death shall bring the despairing rest or comfort. Amazing thing. So, just wanted to take a sidebar there to Genesis 5. Didn't catch that when we were going over it in class, but I caught it later. So, any questions about that? I wish, for the life of me, I could stand up here and say, I came up with that, I was just sitting down. Man, I was studying, I dug deep into the names. No, I'd seen it somewhere else, and then I went back and researched it. Because you never know if something's right. And yeah, so yes, I'm borrowing this from somebody else. And I don't know who what their name is. But anyway, I thought that fascinating. Huh? Yes, I went through and triple checked it. And that's my understanding. That's what the words mean. Turn. No. No, I don't. I'm sorry. And the guy I saw it from, I don't think, is a member of the church. So I did. But I thought, still powerful, powerful statement. And he, you know, I just overwhelmed kind of at the idea there. Something I would normally just overlook and keep reading. All right. So, and it's also fascinating, and I'll shut up because I know we're going to get to our thing, is this is all leading up to the flood. Right, so if I make a connection here, right, that first four lines leading up to the flood, right, the rest of this proceed therefrom, from Noah through the life of the apostles, really, is Jesus teaching us the gospel. And it's all geared toward that one purpose. Again, I'm reminded of 2 Peter Chapter 3, 1 Peter chapter 3. Anybody remember? Talking about Noah, 8 souls were saved by water. In like manner, or the antitype is what? Baptism now saves us. Not the washing away of the filth of the flesh, but what? An answer of a good conscience toward God. All taught through Noah. So, kind of an amazing thing to me. All right, so maybe that'll give you something to study on. And you can go back and double check me and continue to study it. But I wanted to show that to you. Now, let's go to Genesis chapter 25. Turn there in my Bible. So, what was going on when we last talked was we see Abraham coming to the end of his walk on this earth. Sarah, of course, has passed in chapter 23. She was 127. After Sarah had passed, then Abraham sent his servant to go back to his homeland to there go and find a wife for Isaac. He does that, Rebekah. He then brings Rebekah back, chapter 24, and then her and Isaac are married by the end of chapter 24. And then as we go into chapter 25, we then have kind of like the epilogue to the life of Abraham. He marries a woman named Keturah. He has other children through her. If you go to Genesis 25, there's a listing of them. I won't go through them. There's a couple interesting ones I just want to flash out at you real quickly. It seems like all of these individuals, by the way, settled in or near the area that we see in the Promised Land. So just keep that in mind moving forward, that the descendants through her and Abraham settled in an area, some of them, not all of them. You see in there a name, Midian. Does that sound familiar? The Midianites throughout Scripture they're a mixed bag, aren't they, as a people for the children of Israel. Sometimes they help and sometimes they don't. And so, but you see the father of that nation. Also another interesting, in verse 3, you see the name Sheba. Now, why is that interesting? Later in the life of Solomon, who comes to him for a visit? Queen of Sheba. Interesting. I don't know if there's a direct connection there, but just kind of an interesting one. We do know those lands were being settled at this time. So you go through the list. I'll let you spend some time. Maybe you can find something kind of neat in those names as well. But I'm going for this class to move forward. One last thing just to note, verse 5, who received all of the inheritance? Isaac. Now he gives gifts to the children of Keturah, but he does what? He sends them away as he did with Ishmael. They're sent away. Verse 7 tells us, these are the days of Abraham's life, 175 years. So from the time of her death until now, it's been about, I believe, if my calculation's right, about 38 years since the passing of, 38 years since the passing of Sarah. And so he's lived there in the land. It says when he breathed his last, he died at a good old age. Verse 8, an old man full of years and was gathered to his people. Kind of interesting phrase there. So he passes, obviously. But that last phrase of verse 8 kind of denotes what? Not just a physical interest, but what? There's kind of a spiritual element to that. The idea he was gathered to his people, seemingly. There he would have been gathered to the people of God. Verse 9 tells us we get the final note of Ishmael. This is the last time he's noted in Scripture. But we do see in this text the fulfillment of two prophecies about Ishmael. What were the two promises God gave to him when he was sent, he and his mother sent from the land? Do you remember? He would build a great nation, Miss Florence. Yeah, that he would be kind of a rebellious sort, if we will. He was a fighter. That's exactly what you see. One other thing that's kind of interesting to note is, how many sons does he have? 12, right? Jacob has how many? 12. You see that number come up. I'm not saying there's any special significance to it, but it is interesting to note he has 12 sons, as does Jacob later on. Thus, kind of brings to an end this account. Oh, it does say Ishmael lived to be 137. So he falls well short of Abraham at 175. He still lives to what we would definitely deem a ripe old age at 137. All right, any questions about that? And we'll turn our attention elsewhere. All right, so when we look at Isaac, Isaac is kind of interesting in that there's just not that much said about him directly. Most of Isaac's life is kind of what we know about it. It doesn't come from a focused attention on him, but upon others. His early life, his birth and early years were kind of folded into what? The life of Abraham. And it's really that the focus of attention is on Abraham. His later years are really focused on who? Jacob, right? And so we have a very short span, and we're going to go through it real quick, of Isaac's life. And I was thinking about that again and kind of astonished. Another reason why I think this is not a human writer. Because think about all the build-up to Isaac. 25 years they waited for his promised birth. When he's born in kind of not a miraculous way, but an unlikely way. With Sarah being 90 years old, Abraham being 100, that just doesn't typically happen. Even during their time, that didn't typically happen. She was well beyond what they would have considered childbearing years. So he comes, he's promised for a long time. His arrival comes in kind of an unusual, magnificent way. Not miraculous, but magnificent. You have the testing of Isaac, or the testing of Abraham by taking him to Mount Moriah, right? And so you have all this build-up to the life of Isaac. But then when you get into the text, what impressive thing did Isaac do? Can you give me one really impressive thing that he did on his own? Yeah. But you see my point? He was kind of an ordinary guy. I'm not saying he was a bad guy. I just think he was a good guy. But if a human being were writing that story, wouldn't you put at least a couple of things in there to kind of make him stand out? You don't even have him fighting a lion or a bear. I mean, at least Jacob did some stuff, didn't he? David did some stuff. I mean, but he was just kind of an ordinary guy. He did remarry Rebecca, which I know is close to Roger's heart, with his granddaughter being Rebecca. But you know what I'm saying. God can use ordinary people in his scheme. Now, though he may not have done anything that would make people go, ah, and ooh, is he any less important to the biblical story? Here's a pretty ordinary guy who is super important because God used him, and he allowed God to use him. I think there's something significant in that. So we kind of bring the end of the focus on Isaac as we get to verse 19. Now the focus really becomes on to another young man. This young man, from the time he's in the womb, receives a name. We just noted names are pretty significant. Jacob receives his name even from the womb, from as early as the womb. Let's read this. Verse 19. These are the generations of Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham fathered Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Arminian of Padanaram, the sister of Laban, the Arminian, to be his wife. And Isaac prayed to the Lord for his wife because she was barren. And the Lord granted his prayer, and Rebekah, his wife, conceived. Now, before I go on, let's just cover those, and we'll get into the pregnancy. But just noting, there's a lot of great information that God gives us here. Number one, we note that how old is Isaac when he marries Rebekah? 40. How old is he when his boys are born? 60. So he's not 100, but still 60 is a man well into his ages. I don't know how old Rebekah was, but I imagine she's not too far out of range from him. It's also noted in the text that Rebekah is what? Barren. This is an issue that comes up, doesn't it? Who do we see in the text as barren, as having problems with pregnancy? Okay, Sarah. Who else? She's not the only one.
Rachel,
remember? She struggles with it. It's not until later on that she has Joseph. She eventually has a second son, Benjamin, but she dies in childbirth with him.
Elizabeth.
Who?
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth in the New Testament with John the Baptist's mother. So it's a theme. It does come up. Don't forget Hannah in 1 Samuel. She also struggled with it, the mother of Samuel. So this is a thing that comes up quite, actually, not frequently, but often. And so here she is. She's barren. Now, remember, the promise to God is no less true with Isaac than it was with Abraham. And so here is the wife of Isaac, Rebekah, who now has not been able to bear a child. Well, for the promises to be fulfilled, what has to come? A child, right? And it has to be a son to accord with the way they recorded birthright and all of that. We'll talk more about birthright in a minute. That's really important as we move forward. And so she's barren, doesn't have a child. Then the text says he prayed to the Lord, and the Lord granted his request. And so God heard him. So we kind of see that. Let's go down to verse 22. Now, she is pregnant, and then verse 22 says, the children struggled together within her, and she said, if it is thus, why is this happening to me? So she went to inquire of the Lord. Now, before we get into the next verse, what's going on here? You break down the text. Okay, we know that from the future. Let's just deal with this one verse. What does she know right now? She's uncomfortable. She's having a troubled pregnancy, isn't she? That's not too uncommon. That goes on, doesn't it? That happens when women have a troubled... And she seems concerned. What'd you say, Aaliyah?
She knows there's more than one child.
So, Okay, so I've tried to go back and look at that. I was wondering that. God does inform her she has twins. The text informs us. So could she have known she had twins? Certainly. Does she for sure? No. Oh, I may get in trouble. I don't think I will for this one. Lisa has an identical twin sister. Well, I was talking to Ann just the other day about it, and she said, you know when she found out she had twins? When they said there's one more. They never could see the other heartbeat. And so she didn't know until the day of. And so it's possible not to know. Maybe she did know. I'm not saying she didn't. But what she does know is there's something going on that isn't right. And something else that was pointed out as one study I was looking at was, also, you remember Rebecca, where is she? Is she with her parents, with her mother? She's not in her homeland, right? She doesn't have the people around her. Now, she's been there for 20 years. I know she's been there for a little bit, but she doesn't have those familial things that she would have had where she was from. At this point, hopefully she's built up a good rapport with her handmaids. Mm-hmm. And she should have had her group of ladies caring for her. And so she's concerned enough. She goes to God. She prays to him, and God answers her. Now, how exactly he does this? Is he speaking a voice in her ear? Does he show her a vision? I don't know for sure. I don't know we can pull that much out of the text. But in some way, he communicates to her this message. Verse 23. The Lord said to her, and remember that Lord there, you notice it's all capitalized. That's the name of God, Yahweh. Two nations are in your womb, and two peoples from within you shall be divided. That's not necessarily a great message, is it? It means they're going to be at war with one another. The one shall be stronger than the other. And then notice, the older shall serve the younger. Now, that's a pretty big deal in their culture. Why? The firstborn gets double the portion of the inheritance. And so in normal ways of living, this would be out of nature, out of order for the young, for the older to serve the younger. And yet God says that's what's going to happen. And so as you go along, now one other thing was mentioned. We don't know if she told Jacob this. Isaac this or not. We're just left up to speculation there because it really doesn't tell us whether she communicated this message to him or not. Yeah, as you get later in life, you do see that. He seems very intent. Because his intention was, well, we'll get there. We won't steal too much from that lesson. But he sends him out. He wants him to bring him gain so he can give him that. That is his plan. Which may lean credence to the idea that he was never told. Or at least he never took enough stock in it. If he was. It says, verse 24, when her days to give birth were completed, behold, there were twins in her womb. The first came out red, all his body like a hairy cloak, so that they called his name Esau. Now, this is very interesting. Again, a play on names. So what do you note about this little boy? He's hairy. You know anything else? He's red. Remember that. Hairy and red. Those things are going to be associated with Esau for the rest of time. The term red, the first part of 25, is where we get the term Edom. Now, who were his descendants? Edomites. They took that from his hair color was so vibrant that it's something that was a real characteristic of who Esau was. And as we go forward, there's some deeper maybe meanings to that. The name Esau, though, means what? Anybody know? Hairy. Hairy, and that's where he gets the name Esau. So kind of interesting, his names. His brother is no less interesting. After his brother came out with his hand holding to Esau's heel. So his name was called Jacob. Isaac was 60 years old when she bore them. Bet you can guess the name of Jacob, can't you? Heel grabber or supplanter. Either of those two are kind of a literal translation. So that's where Jacob gets his name. Heel grabber, supplanter. And for some parts of his life, that was kind of what he did, grabbing at the heels of others to gain advantage for himself. It is interesting, though, God changes his name. So he's Jacob for for a large part of his life. But then God, I believe, isn't it, after wrestling the angel, gives him a new name. What is it? Israel. Does anybody know what Israel means? Wrestles with God. Wrestles with God. Isn't that characteristic of the Israelite nation? Isn't it? So fascinating. I love that kind of stuff. Again, you have him literally grabbing at the... These two boys are fighting all the way out. They are in constant conflict with one another. If you have boys, you understand that. Verse 27, when the boys grew up, Esau was a skillful hunter, a man of the field, while Jacob was a quiet man dwelling in tents. Isaac loved Esau because he ate his game, but Rebekah loved Jacob. We get the two young men are defined, aren't they? How are they defined? Well, Esau, he's an outdoors guy. Like, he's rough and rugged. He's a man's man, right? If trucks existed, he'd have a big Chevy with big tires on it, or Ford or whatever, right? And he'd have the guns in the back window. He'd have boots on. Like, he's that guy. He also seems to have been boisterous, right? Kind of loud. On the other side, we have contrasted against him, Jacob. Now, how is Jacob portrayed? He's what? Mama's boy. I've seen that a lot. He's quiet, reserved, kind of seemed to be after intelligent pursuits, right? Not that hunting and that stuff isn't, you know, for the intelligent, but he would have been a bookworm, right? He's your nerd who's into that kind of stuff. And then kind of a sad verse. You have the parents divided over whom they love. And I can't help but think this is maybe part of the root cause of what comes later. Now, Esau had his own problems, and Jacob had his own problems at times, but there would have been necessarily tension drawn in the household, right? They knew, those boys knew who the parents' favorite was. And they used that to their advantage, by the way. At least Jacob did. And I also find it interesting that the parent, the child whom they love, is kind of their opposite. Isaac was not a loud, boisterous person. He was quiet, reserved, seemingly from Scripture. Whereas Rebekah seems to be a little bit more, cunning, very slyful. You remember, she's the one that devises the plot later on. And so you have this kind of early childhood end on that note. And then we get into the end of the chapter. I know I'm out of time, but you continue reading. If I could do this real quick. So you have this one event that's just recorded. It's recorded because of its significance. I better not. I don't have enough time. There's a lot here. I want to go to Hebrews next week. So not next week, but in 2 weeks we'll come back and we'll cover the last part here. This is a really kind of important, compelling text, especially as it's as Malachi will label it, and then in the book of Hebrews, the Hebrews writer will focus attention back here and talking about things we should not do, and so we'll look at that. Any questions about what we've covered? That's the cliffhanger to bring you back. Well, good to see you all. I'm glad you're here. We will continue this next week and look look at the selling of the birthright.